Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 565 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, joined this week by the Out of Touchstone host, Chad Smart. Chad, how are things going in your new venture? Last week we talked about your debut episode, and I know you've got two of them under your belt now as we're recording this, and more to come. So how are things going with Out of Touchstone?
They are going fairly well. Yeah, I've been impressed with the reception that the show has gotten. Luckily, you know, the trolls have not found it yet. So good job. Yeah, it's interesting. We were talking before we started recording. I hope at some point to streamline the process so I'm not spending 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, putting these shows together, which would be fine if I was getting paid. But,
sure.
I'm not. So at least it does give me something to do, although it also keeps me sedated in it. Not sedated, but sedentary in a chair. And my back is starting to feel that. So,
well, we are going to, and by the way, you can get the links to Out of Touchstone. We have it in the show notes here, but you can also find it on social media and give them a follow, chat a follow on. You're primarily on X and Blue Sky, right?
Yeah. That is primarily for the Out of Touchstone. Myself, I'm primarily on X, if you want to just follow me for my witticism that I put out there when I mock Kevin
on yes.
a weekly basis, which I haven't done lately. I feel like I haven't gotten a Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been quite some time. See, I've been busy. I've been off social media because I've been working on the show.
I know. I'm telling you, it's putting in that work and the production value I told you earlier was nothing short of fantastic. So kudos to you for that for sure. Yeah. But
Before we get going though, I want to go back to last week's episode when we were talking Hulk Hogan, because we were recording this on the day that it is the 40th anniversary of the debut of Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Which also is the 40th anniversary of the debut of 227 and the Golden Girls.
You don't say. Thank you for being a friend. Yeah, I got this from you, actually. I've got my Golden Girl swag, I think, came from you. So
yeah.
I posted a video earlier. We went to the Golden Girls. They had a pop-up thing in Chicago a few years ago. Oh. I posted some pictures from that. And then, probably 6 or 7 years ago now, we did the Golden Girls for Halloween with another couple and actually won $250 for our efforts in a costume contest. So,
nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't realize 227 was also, did it also debut in 85?
Yeah. Yep. Same day. Did you know there are Golden Girl murder mystery books?
Really? I did not.
Yeah. So if you want to start the My 1-2-3 Cents book club, that can be your first.
There you go. Yeah. Obviously, I think we actually did a podcast years ago called 1985 because
probably.
I do feel like that was kind of a lot of pop culture things hit the ground running, you know, with the movies, the TV, especially with wrestling, you know, between WrestleMania, Saturday Night's Main Event, the Hulk Hogan cartoon, and then the release of the wrestling album. You know, lots of great things happening in 85 for sure.
Yeah. Back to the Future.
Was that a good year for Touchstone?
Touchstone. It was the second year of Touchstone. So I believe I'm trying to think, remember what all was. Let me pull up my handy list right here. No, they only released two movies, Baby, Secret of a Lost Legend, mm-hmm. which pre-Jurassic Park, those dinos looked dino-rific, and My Science Project, which is kind of an underrated sci-fi teen.
I don't remember that one movie. At all.
Yeah, I was just watching a video about the first couple of years of Touchstone Pictures, and the guy brought it up. The guy who did it, did the video, was talking about it. He's like, you know, I really like this movie, but it came out and got buried by Back to the Future, Real Genius, and several other more higher profile films.
Yeah,
My Science Project. We watched it for the podcast when we started the Add Up Touchstone podcast several years ago, and it's one of those movies that I think had you seen it in '85, you'd probably have fond memories of it and like it, but if you watch it now, might not have the same
appeal.
Yeah, appeal. There you go. Yeah. And speaking of '85, that's the year the Goonies came out. And I'm actually heading up to Astoria, Oregon in a couple of weeks. And now can finally go to the Goonies house. It is now free. New owners invite the Goonie fans up. And
oh, cool.
So maybe I'll shoot some video and put that up on the Gotta Touchstone.
I was just going to say that is an opportunity right there. So yeah, definitely do that and be sure to check back and check chat experiences at the Goonies house. That's pretty cool. I'm a little jealous actually. Well, this week we are talking wrestling and kind of nostalgic, and I don't know what your ideas are going to be, but we may have some modern day guys and gals on this list as well, but we're talking heels and faces and what was best for certain wrestling characters or wrestlers. And then also kind of wanted to pick your brain and find out from you, what do you think makes a good guy and a good bad guy? I know people throw the heel and face term out, and I feel weird saying it because I don't know why, but I know a lot of people, since the curtain has been pulled back so far now, and hell, WWE has invited us into the room. So I guess there really is no kayfabe or any of that anymore, but
yeah, I don't know, it just sounds weird. Like when you texted me yesterday and said, oh, we're going to discuss who's baby, and I'm like, that doesn't even make like sense as a sentence, like
only a wrestler.
I understood what you were saying, but yeah, it's just one of those words, it's one of those phrases. It's not as bad as using the word Stan instead of fan. That will be my old man yelling at Cloud segment on Out of Touchstone. But
well, what do you think, you know, when it comes to good guys, and we've talked about this 1,000 times before, you know, Hulk Hogan in the 80s was kind of that banner good guy, although his actions oftentimes were not, you know, he was raking people's eyes. Throwing
salt. Ratting out Jesse the Body Ventura, refusing to work with people. Yeah.
Well, I'm not talking about the backstage stuff. I'm talking about the in-ring actions. But what to you makes a good guy and a good bad guy in wrestling?
I mean, I think the good guy has to be kind of that. Saying this phrase probably isn't the best term, but the all-American, like just pro. What am I trying to say? You know, like with John Cena right now, all the Make-A-Wish stuff that he does, you know, it's got to be someone who's there for the fans and treats the fans as equals or better than, you know. And just, you know, wants to do, doesn't cheat, doesn't take the low road, tries to stay to a higher moral authority, I guess.
Kind of that, like current day, Cody Rhodes, not so much Randy Orton, but John Cena for sure. Who over on the AEW side of things do you think is a shining example as a good guy right now?
Well, he's out injured still, but I would say Orange Cassidy. I don't think Hangman Page, the champion, really is, but that's part of his character, is the redemption of him. I don't think they have a full. I guess Willow Nightingale on the women's side could fit in that category. But
does wrestling need a good guy and a bad guy to be successful? Because I feel like you said, AEW is a little more ambiguous with it, but in WWE and other, you know, growing up, WCW, all of those companies, you either had like the foreign nemesis on the bad guy side, or just the asshole, cocky asshole. And then the good guys were waving the American flag, or they were stopping and smiling and taking pictures with the fans. So I feel like you have, because that's kind of where the WrestleMania 6 alleged lack of success came from, because you had two good guys and Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior going face to face. So what do you think? Do we need to be very clear cut black and white, or like Vince McMahon said, there's shades of gray, said this 30 years ago at the launch of the Attitude Era?
Yeah, I think since the launch of the Attitude Era, you know, our society has changed. So you look back in the 80s, you know, when we were, I guess, under that threat of the Cold War and you know, Russia being the big enemy, that, again, that all-American aspect played big into it. And then you could have the foreign heel. Now if you have a foreign heel, it's just seen as lazy or racist. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with that typical good guy, but I think we as a society know that there are, you know, it's, I think if you go full good guy, it's almost disingenuous. Like people don't believe, like there's, you're a suspect, or as the kids would say, you're sus. And the kids are not saying that. And I just looked really old right there, but you know, that's the thing, is like, no one believe you're too good. You know, there's got to, you obviously have ulterior motives behind what you're doing.
Right. So like a Stone Cold Steve Austin, obviously, I don't think he ever changed from, he amped it up obviously and had the anti-authority rhetoric behind him when he was the good guy. I feel like, you know, that Austin Vince McMahon dynamic was reminiscent of Rowdy Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan. You know, one without the other, I don't think would have had the amount of success as they ended up ultimately having. I mean, and said, ignore the dogs there, but I assume you're kind of on that same page.
Well, yeah, we've talked about it before. You can't just have a good guy. You have to have, you know, there has to be that evil force, or it's all about the balance and the contrast. Because if you have just one, because, you know, even looking at the bloodline, when Roman Reigns, you know, was in charge and was the ultimate bad guy, he had to have somebody good to go against that would evoke emotion as well. And you know, and so they bring in Cody Rhodes, who, you know, as you alluded to earlier, is that that white meat baby face right now. So if Cody didn't come around, you know, would it have been Sami Zayn? Could it have been Jimmy or Jey Uso at the time? You know, because I'm trying to think back over that time period, and I don't think until Cody came around, I don't feel like there was any true mega babyface,
right?
To challenge Roman.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the hokey pokey, especially. I feel like since the Attitude Era, I feel like there's a lot more of the hokey pokey, Seth Rollins, Roman to an extent, but even like Drew McIntyre and some of those other guys, you know, you see them kind of flipping. Randy Orton has done it several times. And so that's kind of where I wanted to go with talking about, you know, because I do think there are some wrestlers who are better suited one or the other, and more unique cases, a handful that were very successful at doing both. And again, kind of staring back to Hulk Hogan, I think Hulk Hogan, if you did a Mount Rushmore of best face heel or good guy, bad guy, I think Hulk Hogan would have to be on there, because he really revolutionized the sport in two different decades, or the business in two different decades, in the 80s being the ultimate good guy, and in the 90s being that cocky heel that ultimately, I think, was responsible then, like we talked about a minute ago, the change in the perception, because the NWO became, even though when they first came in, they were considered a threat and they were bad guys. I think they quickly, though, became those cool heels, and it kind of changed. We didn't have that chicken shit heel where they run away, you know, Rowdy Roddy Piper from the 80s. Yeah. All that changed with the NWO, I think. And I would argue not for the better, even though we did see that big boom in the late 90s.
Yeah, I think when you start being the cool heel, it dilutes the character because you're not, I don't want to say not giving it your all, but fans aren't buying, fans don't care if you get beat up or not, or, you know, if you lose. And and I had another thought there that I was going to go with, but I think, you know, with the NWO, that times were changing. You know, we hadn't really gotten into the anti-hero aesthetic that we got to in the early 2000s, but I think that was part of, you know, the part of bringing it into the mainstream and being the anti-hero. But it, I was going to say, going off what we were just talking about, you know, other than Sting, the NWO didn't have a strong good guy to face. And so, you know, I mean, you had Lex Luger, you had Savage, but again, those are guys that are also known for being heels during their career. You know, and looking back now, did that, you know, especially after Starrcade 97, when everything went wrong, that could go wrong with a match that's been built up for over a year, you know, where do you go after that, basically, if you don't have those strong divisions?
Yeah. So let's throw some names out there. I don't know where to start, so I'll just start with the guy that's on
Big Show.
Character. Well, yeah, we'll get to Big Show. He's on the list, but Mankind is one of those characters, and I think even back in the Cactus Jack days in WCW, you know, I can remember reading in the After mags seeing Cactus Jack in World Class and USWA and kind of the violent nature that he had. And then he comes to WCW and still kind of living up to that, attacking Sting, teaming with Abdullah the Butcher, you know, being this vicious character. And then somewhere along the way, fans got behind that and started cheering him. And he turns good and faces Vader, loses part of his ear, and goes on that trajectory. And I think he eventually goes to ECW, and you were probably more of a fan of ECW back at this time. I don't know how they presented him there, because I don't think he was there for a terribly long time, but comes to the WWF as Mankind, attacks The Undertaker, instantly into the upper echelon of the card, despite, you know, hesitations from Vince McMahon. And then the fans again get behind him, and he turns good. And I'm kind of in the middle on Mankind as a good guy or a bad guy, because I feel like when they turned him against Austin in 98, when Austin had won the belt, I felt like it was kind of a desperation move because they didn't have anyone next, because they lost Shawn Michaels. Rock wasn't ready. And so they kind of went to that well with Mankind. And I really enjoyed the more lovable Sacco, you know, wearing the shirt, you know, and I know they kind of went back and forth with them, but what are your opinions and thoughts on Cactus? Because Cactus Jack, again, that character just screams bad guy because he's this vicious, violent person.
Yeah. Well, I remember being at Monday Night Raw in St. Louis when Triple H and Stephanie were on their first go around as, you know, the evil leaders of WWF. And at the end of the show, I actually think it was off air, Mick Foley comes out, Mankind comes out, and he's like, you know, I can't take you on. I know I can't beat you, but I know who can. And he takes his shirt off, and he's got the flannel on. And he's like, Cactus Jack. And Triple H sold it like, you know, he just, the you know, the most heinous thing you'd ever seen. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to, you know, get my ass kicked now. And I think that helps sell the character of Cactus Jack too. But yeah, I'm with you. I like Cactus Jack when he was in WCW. I don't think I was watching ECW at the time when he was, that brief period he was there. I mean, you know, I was reading about it and whatnot, but I think when he came to WWE or WWF, he obviously, like you said, attacked Undertaker, got into that feud, and was presented as a threat, as, you know, a deranged lunatic, basically. And then I think things changed when they did the sit-down interview with JR, and we got to know Mrs. Foley's little boy. Mm-hmm. And it humanized him. And then he turns more into Mick Foley Mankind than Cactus Jack Mankind.
Yeah.
And you know, Mick Foley, if you follow him on social media, you know, that personality is not a bad guy.
Right.
He is like the ultimate.
It's hard to hate the guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves Christmas and Santa.
He loves Christmas. Yeah. And I've seen he and his family were at Disneyland recently. You know, it's like, so I think that, you know, and that's another aspect of looking at this is when we were growing up in the 80s, what we knew of the character and the people were from the magazines or the TV show. Right. And now with social media, with everything, you see more of the, you know, the real person. So if someone is, you know, going against type, their real life personality is against type of what they are in the ring, it does have a disconnect.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because one that I figured you would probably bring up somewhere along the way is MJF. Mm-hmm. I know that he is notorious for kind of staying in character and being that asshole, even at autograph signings and stuff. Mm-hmm. And AEW did a brief run, I guess, with him as a good guy when he was feuding with Adam Cole, because Adam Cole was revealed as the devil, and that all.
Well, they teamed up, and then Adam Cole got injured, and they kept going with the devil storyline, and then finally it was revealed that Adam Cole was the devil, but he was still injured, and so that storyline was terrible.
But they were good guys, right? As a tag team.
They were good guys as a tag team, yeah. Yeah.
But he's been pretty good about keeping it in character, if you will, on social media. But I guess it was last weekend he got married, and of course, a lot of the people who talk crap about him on their podcast or say he's an evil person or whatnot are there at the wedding. Do you think things like that? I mean, because I think everybody by 2025, we're all in on it. We know
what's going on. I mean, you saw the Tony Khan's explanation for that, right?
No.
So MJF married, I think her name's Alicia Atot. She's a backstage reporter for AEW. He said she is very well liked behind the scenes or, you know, in AEW. So people were there to support her, even though she was marrying MJF.
Okay.
And then I can't remember who said it, but someone said, yeah, that's a very Bill Watts explanation.
Well, no, that makes, okay. That's more plausible then. I guess, like you said, though, social media does, because especially now, someone who protected it so well, his gimmick, that is The Undertaker. You know, he went for years where he was in all black. He stayed off of social media. Now that he's retired, and I get it, he's found a new life in podcasting, and he's with his wife. You know, like The Undertaker character would have never been associated with Michelle McCool, the character, back in the day. But The Undertaker, you know, how did you come to like him better as a heel, as a face, as part of this American badass? Because he, you know, again, to have longevity, I think you have to change up the character and the look from time to time.
I liked him as a heel. And I would say I probably preferred him as a heel overall. Uh-huh. If you go over the whole career, the American Badass obviously was a departure, and the most, I guess, closest we got to him being an actual person.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the rumors are true that he did that because, you know, if he made the jump to WCW, he knew he wouldn't be able to take the Undertaker character. So it was something to get fans used to a different persona. Again, that could be just internet speculation. Sure. I think at that point, again, because of where WWF was at the time in the Attitude Era, I think it was necessary for Taker to become, you know, less than the supernatural being or different than the supernatural. But I think once he kind of reverted back to more on that side, you know, not going full black coat, purple tie, Undertaker, but go be more where he can shoot lightning out of the sky into the ring post. I think that helped the character itself. And again, I think because he had such a long career that eventually fans were going to, you know, become fans, you know, cheer him on.
Yeah.
Longevity dictates that you can't hate somebody that long, I guess, maybe, hopefully. I don't know.
Well, and I agree.
Except for Randy Orton.
I was going to say Randy Orton, and we'll get to him in a minute too. But I think that with The Undertaker, you know, I did, the character had to come in as a bad guy, you know, just by presentation and look alone. I did enjoy when he turned against Jake the Snake and saved Savage and Elizabeth, Macho Man and Elizabeth. And yeah, I think that it is hard sometimes to be that big towering guy, like when he feuded with Mankind right out of the gate. But again, I feel like that's another one of those, not to the same level as Hogan, Piper, or McMahon, Austin, but I think Undertaker and Mankind fed off of each other. And I do think they helped each other along the way as well. We saw that the Undertaker was vulnerable against a smaller opponent, that he wasn't going to just bulldoze. And I know Mankind only won a couple of times against the Undertaker, but it gave that character more credibility, I think, as well, and put him in a different stratosphere than, you know, the King Kong Bundys or Jake the Snakes or those other WrestleMania opponents that the Undertaker had easily defeated. So
now you talk about, you know, now he's totally not the Undertaker. He's more and more Callaway. Do you think he's trying to make up for 30 years of kayfabe just by being out there doing every non-Undertaker thing that he can?
Yeah, it seems like.
And how do you think his booking of AAA is going to go?
Is he going to be the head booker? I know
he's one of the producers.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see and watch. I don't know. Speaking of AAA, I guess, you know, cause there are some guys that never or seemingly never turned, Tito Santana, Ricky Steamboat, the Von Erichs. I know they dabbled a little bit in Florida. Allegedly, if you do some searching, they cut some heel promos, but for the most part, we remember the Von Erichs as good guys, but Rey Mysterio, I don't remember. Did they try to do Rey as a bad guy at one point in either company? I don't remember him being like full fledged.
In WCW, there were the Filthy Animals. Mm-hmm. It was him, Conan, Billy Kidman, I believe. And I remember, you know, there was one episode where Ric Flair, Bischoff was his lackey because of some stipulation. So he was driving him to a show in the limo, and he took the limo out into the desert, and the Filthy Animals beat up Flair and buried him. And again, this was just on Wrestling with Regret, the Worst of Nitro video that they put out last week. And they said this, you know, during the show, we see it at home, but apparently the commentating team didn't see it. And so when Flair shows up all beat up and dirty, they're like, why is he, you know, it's total disconnect, which again, goes into the many, many problems WCW had in their later years. But yeah, I think they tried to make Ray heal. This is when he was unmasked as well. And again, yeah, I just didn't. I mean, I think they were trying to be cool heels as well.
Yeah.
And it, you know, yeah, it just did not work for, you know, when you see a 5'2" guy out there.
Right.
Trying to be badass. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned him too, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. One of the all-time great heels, in my opinion, one of the best bad guys in the business. Obviously, as he got older, I do think that fans, you know, I wouldn't say he became cool, or he was cool, I guess, but not to the same level, or it was a different kind of cool than the NWO. But he became kind of that anti-authority figure as well in WCW, and then later in WWE when he's managing Evolution and still kind of getting in there and wrestling. And now anytime these retired guys come back, they're always going to get a pop and the fans are going to cheer for them. So I personally enjoyed Nate better as a bad guy. It just it made sense. It was the styling and profiling and you know, the fraternizing with women. But I do think I enjoyed him as a face as well. I don't think he was as good as Hogan doing both sides of that, but I do think there was some value in Ric Flair being the good guy from time to time. But overall, though, give me the Four Horsemen as bad guys, beating people up in parking lots and causing all kinds of hell like that.
Yeah, well, he's called the dirtiest player in the game for a reason, because he doesn't shower. But yeah, you know, I think when he went face in, you know, the late stages of WCW, again, it's because the NWO was the top bad faction and you needed someone to go against them, which Flair had the legitimacy to do so. But, you know, being the WCW, with the exception of that, you know, that 2 year span when he was in WWF, he'd been associated with the NWA, JCP, you know, WCW from its inception. But again, he was a good guy, but not really, because he, you know, he's still the dirtiest player in the game, but the fans wanted to cheer him because he was fighting for, because he was fighting for WCW.
Yeah.
So,
but, I agree.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Nature Boy character, to a lesser extent, but there are three I'm going to throw at you now that I don't think should have ever turned good, even though I enjoyed Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff as a good guy back in 1985. I was for it. In hindsight, looking back at it, when you have a name like Mr. Wonderful, Mr. Perfect, and Ravishing Rick Rude, those are three assholes to me. That you're cocky, you're overconfident. And Rick Rude, I don't think they ever, or at least the Ravishing Rick Rude character, I don't think ever turned good. But Mr. Perfect, I know it was a desperation act in 92 when the Ultimate Warrior got fired from WWF and they needed a partner for the Macho Man Randy Savage. So it became a little bit more out of necessity. But I feel like Mr. Perfect as a good guy, it did not work for me, brother. And, you know, Rick Rude, like I said, I don't think they ever turned him, but I'm glad that they didn't, because he's one of the all-time great bad guys. But what are your thoughts on Mr. Perfect and Mr. Wonderful in their babyface runs in the WWF?
I want to agree with you, but then I also look back and remember that the very first item that I ever ordered from the WWF magazine was a poster of Mr. Wonderful. So apparently I enjoyed him as a...
Well, yeah, at the time, I agree. Yeah. You know, we're 12 or 13 years old, so it made sense back then to resonate to that.
Yeah, but, you know, and it's weird because outside of WrestleMania 1 and the steel cage match on Saturday Night's Main Event, I don't really have a lot of vivid WWF memories of Mr. Wonderful. You know, associate him more with WCW.
Oh, and that's interesting.
And Gary Spivey and... the pretty wonderful tag team. I agree with your assessment that when you have a nickname that just screams douchebag, like you should be a heel.
Yeah.
And I agree, you know, turning perfect, you know, again, it comes with times where it's like, well, we need somebody that the fans are instantly going to buy, you know, you can put them in there. So, but yeah, I agree with you that I think probably Wonderful and Henning should have been stayed heels for the most part. And Ravishing Rick Rude, I think, always was. And I think maybe very briefly in ECW, he may have kind of been presented, not necessarily as a face, but not
as a
total dick. Yeah, he's not airbrushing his opponent's wife on his tights.
What about Lex Luger? He was one that I enjoyed in the Four Horsemen, but then when he turned and I got behind him on that as well. Coming to the WWF though as the narcissist, and then he changed so many times, and like the Big Show, and we'll talk about him in a second too. But I did not like the turn. I liked the narcissist character, but I could see where it had a certain level of
shelf
where
life.
It wasn't good. Yeah, it had a shelf life. Going all American and trying to pick up where Hulk Hogan had left off didn't work for me either, though. I feel like there could have been something better for Lex somewhere along the way, and I don't know what that would have been. He felt like a round hole in a square peg in a round hole in the WWF. Even though he fit the body type at the time, he just didn't, to me, fit the personality of the WWF. So always liked him better, I think, as that cocky heel, though.
I agree. I remember seeing him in Florida as just the Luger when he was just wearing sunglasses and being silent as the, I can't remember, I think it was Masahiro Chono, not Masahiro Chono, Hiro Matsuda, maybe.
Yes. Yes.
He was with.
You're right.
Yeah, I like Luger better as a heel. And I think him being face was more of, or anytime he turned really, was more of desperation of, we need a challenger. And Luger is somebody you can put in and the fans are going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As long as it's not against Barry Windham at Great American Bash.
Oh, God. Yeah. That I do remember that. Someone I have on my list that I wanted to get into the conversation is the Big Boss Man. You know, we saw him as Big Bubba Rogers in JCP, where he was a bad guy, came to the WWF. I think Vince McMahon gave him a fresh coat of paint and turned him into one of those unstoppable bad guys against Hulk Hogan right out of the gate, pretty much. And eventually he turns good. I actually like Boss Man better as a good guy. When he came back and during the Attitude Era, they updated the look, but it didn't feel the same again. And, you know, he's 8 years older or whatever it was at the time. So, I liked Big Boss Man as you know, Hard Times, Cobb County, Georgia, feuding with Ted DiBiase and the Heenan family and Slick and all of those guys. So what about you with the Big Boss Man?
Yeah, I think Boss Man is another one of those gimmicks that could only work at a specific time. I don't know if that's just because the age that we were that bought into it, or just in the early 90s, WWF, that character worked, but then you bring it back in the late 90s and it's too cartoony. But, you know, he's one that I think definitely, I was going to say, better heel in WCW, good face in WWF, later stage just kind of there, which not any fault of his own. I think when he was back in WCW, when he was the boss, the guardian angel.
Oh, yeah. Whatever,
like they just didn't know what to do with him. And then bringing him back for the, you know, with the Attitude Era, like you said, he's a little bit older, which, I mean, now today wouldn't have been a big thing because I think he's probably younger than what some of the top guys are.
Yeah, he died at 41, so.
Yeah. But I think he, you know, it was at that point where there were new stars and he was he was the Pedro Morales of the Attitude Era.
There you go. Well, you mentioned Big Show a little bit ago. Obviously starting off as the Giant in WCW. And I think he kind of jumped a couple of times there. He joined the NWO, or he was a Dungeon of Doom member. I don't remember if he went straight from Dungeon of Doom to the NWO. Or if there was a train. Okay. So he kind of stayed a bad guy most of his tenure there. Of course, he gets kicked out of the NWO and eventually jumps to the WWF, where he's the big guy, you know, big bad guy. I think they were going to call him Big Nasty at one point, but he, I feel like he's another one of those, was overexposed. He should have been treated more like Andre in those early days where he was an attraction. And then, of course, going back and forth didn't help him, I don't think. I'm kind of indifferent on the Big Show, and I feel bad for saying that, but I don't remember ever a time where I was, like, pulling for him, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. I mean, I enjoyed the Big Show, and maybe it's because, you know, hanging out with him after an ECW show while he sat on his bus smoking a cigarette.
Yes.
But I should say, he sat on the steps of his bus. We weren't on the bus.
Yeah, we weren't on the bus.
But I agree with you. I think he is someone that was overexposed. It's that question of, if Andre were around today, would he have been, you know, the Andre that we know? Right. Or would they have, you know, because same way with Great Khali and, I mean, I think they've got it right with Omos, where he only shows up once a year. And you remember that there's a guy named Omos on the roster. But yeah, Big Show, again, I don't know if it goes back to what I've been saying about the necessity for a heel turn, or if they just lack of, okay, what do we do now? Because again, it's a guy who should be somewhat unstoppable, but you know, when you have Rey Mysterio beating him, when you have Daniel Bryan beating him and Mark Henry at the same time, you know, it diminishes the character a little bit.
Yeah, because Kurt Hennig did the, I guess it was Perfect Plex in WWF, but I guess it was the Fisherman Suit. You know, he picked the Big Show up and did that to him, or the Giant. And so, I think once you take those big guys off their feet and show their vulnerability, it does kind of hurt some of that credibility as being this big, monstrous, nasty guy. What about, we talked about him earlier, Randy Orton. I know you're not a big fan of his in general, but do you have a preference of him being face or heel?
I have a preference for him not being on my TV, but no, that's, you know, it's where it's what we were talking about earlier about learning about the person, the actual personality of the person. I think in the last probably 2 years, my dislike of Orton has gone down because of seeing him with his family, or seeing, you know, it's like, and I think he's also on WWE television has changed the personality to be more of a just like, hey, I'm here. Okay, what are we going to do? Instead of being cocky, Randy Orton. And I mean, I also think he's been injured a lot lately, so I haven't had to watch him a lot. So that probably helps. But yeah, I think he's a better heel. I think he just has the aura of heelness to him. So
I agree. Don't want to leave the ladies out. What about Charlotte Flair? I think that she is a natural, you know, we've talked before about second or third generations and them trying to maybe distance themselves somewhat from their famous parents. But I think Charlotte has embraced it and in a good way, where I think that she is better off as a, I am going to say heel, because saying bad girl just sounds really stupid. So I do enjoy her more doing evil, nefarious things like her dad used to do.
Yeah, it's weird. I think there's something about her that kind of like with Randy Orton, where just the aura of heel fits her better than, you know, and she's someone, I guess, I don't know that much about her real life personality. I haven't seen that to know what she's like. But yeah, and I think it also goes with what the dynamic of the other women wrestlers in WWE are. I think she kind of stands out as a true heel to oppose the baby faces.
Yeah. Well, and Chelsea Green is someone too that I have high regard for. And I think that she has gotten so over, and she's again, one of those that has almost turned into the heel who has become so popular and has made it cool, even though you want to despise her and she surrounds herself with bodyguards and you want to hate her, but then the fans love her and you know, I'm on board with that, but I do prefer her. I hope they keep her, find a way to keep her bad as well. And same with Tiffany Stratton. I think that and I know they were kind of going for the stuck up sorority girl type with her character originally, and they've evolved it a little bit, but she's another one I feel like would be better served as being on, you know, the bad side of things.
Yeah. I think Tiffany's problem from my perspective is, again, repeating myself, you have to have a strong challenger.
Yeah.
And since she's been champion, the only seemingly strong challenger she's had is Nia Jax. And I know she, you know, Tiffany has had a few matches with Jade Cargill, who everyone expected to be champion by this point. And I, for whatever reason, they just haven't pulled that trigger, but then they keep going back to Nia Jax, and they have the history with Tiffany Stratton. Yeah, I think Tiffany right now is just kind of lost in that they don't know what to do with her. And so, but I'm going to segue, because you're talking Chelsea and Tiffany, you're on the precipice of what I was going to bring up with Dominic Mysterio, who is total heel, total scumbag. But the fans love it, you
yeah.
know? And he just won the AAA Mega Championship. Huge ovation when he won.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like Austin, you know, going back to after Austin 316 was born. Austin didn't change, but the fans' perception changed.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you stand on the fans dictating whether you're good or bad? But no matter, you know, you can have the same personality. And, you know, obviously in wrestling, it's who you're, I guess, put up against.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like Austin didn't change, but instead of going against Brett, and, or I guess Brett was a heel at this point, but, you know, he was going against heels instead of other faces.
Yeah. Yeah. Dominic is another one of those good examples. And I think we talked about this a while back, you know, even when he's doing an interview for Chris Van Vliet or, you know, a podcast or whatever, he's showing that human side, but then
he's got right the character back. Down. Yeah.
He stays in that character, and there's something about it that 4 or 5 years ago, I would have never predicted it. I thought he was going to be another Nepo baby. Another one of these.
He was a bland baby. He was white. He was green.
Yeah. He's just one of those guys that I enjoy. And I know I'm not supposed to because he's a bad guy. But again, he's got it down and it just works. You know, being that sleazy, kind of cocky douchebag, you know, womanizer from Rhea Ripley to Liv Morgan to Roxana Perez, I guess there may be something percolating there. I don't know, but I enjoy what they're doing with him. And I keep wondering like, how long is this going to last with him? And I you know, I've enjoyed the ride, and it's such a departure. Like we talked about his dad earlier, it's such a departure from Rey Mysterio that you don't expect it. And then when it happens, you know, I think he kind of turned when he kicked Edge in the sack back in the day, and then kind of pushed his dad out of the way. And then you're like, okay, this kid is, I feel like the rocket got strapped onto his back and he's gone nowhere but up, which is a good thing. So, and he's young. I like that too, that they're kind of investing in some younger talent now. And that to me is going to go a long way.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest problems we've seen in the history of wrestling is that you ride people until they're done and you don't have someone there to take the mantle, and then you have to scramble and try to get someone there. You know, Dom compared to MJF, I think MJF just comes off a total douche in real life as well. And whether that's intentional or what, but Dominic comes off as a cocky but lovable guy. Like
I think, and I think the difference is Dominic doesn't think he's being a douche or think he's an asshole. MJF,
he's not trying to be. He's not trying to be.
Yeah, he's trying to be endearing. Hey, you know, almost that Eddie Haskell quality, more ramped up. And
Or I would say like his father, Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah, another charming. Eddie, yes. God, 20 years talking about time and whatnot. It'll be 20 years this fall. What about Eddie? He did both and did them both.
He did both and did great. And I think he was... You know, I think he's probably the first person we've mentioned who it didn't matter what he was the best at both.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think I liked him. The lie, cheat, steal stuff.
Yeah.
Which
was heelish, but it was face.
Right.
You know, it's like.
And it's still to this day, you know, you still see, I think in both companies, both AEW and WWE, you see incarnations of that pop up from time to time, and they've put twist on them and whatnot, but man, it was so it was so clever and so good. I really enjoyed that. I'm glad you mentioned his name because he was not on my list. Anyone else on your list that you want to talk about before we wrap up?
No, I'm trying to think. I have no one. I didn't come prepared for.
Well, speaking of lists, what about Jericho? Chris Jericho, he's another one that has been around for 30 years and has ebbed and flowed and changed with the times. I think I liked him better as a bad guy, you know, especially in WCW when they first turned him and he was doing his you know, kind of changing people's names and insulting people. And then it carried over a little bit in WWF when he first came in and interrupted The Rock. I mean, to me, that was kind of peak Jericho at the time.
Yeah, I think the young, brash, cocky Jericho was probably the best. And he has done well to evolve the character. You know, we talked about him, I think, last week, because the speculation of where he'll show up next. I don't know. I think Jericho's time has come. You know, I think that shelf life has expired.
And yeah.
Nothing against him. I was a huge Jerichoholic, but time comes for all of us. And
yeah.
I just think Jericho's time is, but I think whatever he does, when wherever he shows up, he will do a good job of whatever he is portraying now. That makes sense. So
yeah, absolutely. All right, Chad. Well, if you have no one else on your list, we're going to wrap it up and invite our listeners and our viewers to weigh in and let us know who were some good guys and bad guys, or vice versa. What do you like in your heels and faces? And Chad, anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Well, I just, again, you know, I've said I don't have cable or Netflix anymore, so I can't watch WWE, but I was reading something after SmackDown, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Last week on SmackDown, I say last week, September 5th, John Cena made his last appearance on SmackDown in Chicago. He comes out, he says, this is going to be my last SmackDown appearance. And then the week later, Brock Lesnar shows up looking for John Cena. Does Brock Lesnar not watch the show, or did someone not talk to him? Yeah. But he did get to meet Ron Cena, so.
There you go. That's good. I did not realize that Brock was, I knew Brock was there. I didn't realize he was on a Cena finding mission, so.
Yeah, because they're fighting this weekend.
Yeah.
Which no one knows why, but yeah.
Well, he attacked him after SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, good enough reason. Just wait a month.
I guess if we threw in some mimosas, it would make for a better match, right? I'm just kidding. All right, friends, thanks for listening and or watching this week. We will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.